This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you this evening. The seat of Higgins in the federal election is one of the safest blue ribbon Liberal seats in this state. But an interesting one for our community, as this year two out gay candidates will vie for the seat. We'll take a look at the seat of Higgins and we'll speak to a political scientist and a former candidate for the seat of Higgins. That's tonight on The Informer. Well, the federal seat of Higgins was created in 1949, named after Justice H.B. Higgins. It has been a blue ribbon Liberal seat for, well, since then, but things, they might be a-changing. We are joined by Dr. Nick Economou, who is a political scientist with Monash University. Thank you very much for making yourself available.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Nick, what do we know about the seat of Higgins, other than the fact that the Liberals have had a stronghold on that seat since day one, pretty much?
Yes, it covers an area of the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne, very, very affluent, high-income earners, professionals, very well-educated. It's a much older age demographic than electorates closer to the city centre. It has some interesting ethnic divisions in there. There's quite a large Jewish community in parts of the electorate. And all of these things make it, of course, seat that the Liberals win comfortably. It's not one of the safest Liberal seats in the country by any means. Its margin can be anywhere between 5 to 10%, depending on how well the Liberal Party is travelling in politics generally. I think that sometimes gives this impression that it's a marginal seat that could be won by another party, presumably Labor, although I think sometimes the Greens also feel that they have a good chance in a seat like Higgins, but I think that's highly unlikely. The seat is basically a fairly safe Liberal seat.
Now, it was the former seat for the Federal Treasurer, Peter Costello, until he resigned, forcing a by-election in 2009.
That's quite correct, which, of course, shows that the status of Higgins, as far as the Liberal Party is concerned. And before Mr. Costello, the sitting member was a guy called Roger Shipton. Now, what's interesting there is that there were major internal fights for control of the various branches, Liberal Party branches within Higgins. There was also some changes to the Liberal Party rules back in the 1980s when Mr. Costello's great friend and then party president, Michael Kroger, was in charge. And these were designed to ease Mr. Shipton out and bring Mr. Costello in. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning all of these things is that what's interesting is that instances of that sort of internal party politics is a sign of the status of the seat. That is, seats that are very safe for the major parties tend to have a rich history of internal politics to try and determine who gets that pre-selection for that seat. Because, frankly, the contest within the Liberal Party for pre-selection to Higgins is more important than the electoral contest, as it were, because basically the voters of Higgins will more or less endorse whatever pre-selection decision has been made by the Liberal Party.
Why is it that the fight, if you like, internally within the Liberal Party is so dogged for that seat? It's been referred to as the prime ministerial seat in the past.
Right. It's the sort of seat that when the Liberal Party has reviews of its internal operation, quite often those internal party reviews will talk about the need for high-quality candidates in electorates like Higgins, because the view is that the people who will be pre-selected for those sorts of seats can look forward to a long career in Parliament, and their aspirations should be not simply just to win the seat, because that's going to happen anyway, but that they should figure prominently in the leadership team of that party. That was the argument that was used against Mr. Shipton to deny him pre-selection. I think it was back in the 80s or 90s, and that allowed Mr. Costello to get pre-selection. Kelly O'Dwyer, who's the incumbent, the present Liberal sitting member, is seen as someone who will be quite prominent into the future. Indeed, she's holding ministerial positions now and is seen as someone who will figure prominently in Liberal Party leadership in years to come. So that's the sort of seat that it is.
That suggests that Kelly O'Dwyer had to do quite a lot to actually get that that position.
Well, Kelly O'Dwyer basically had to win the pre-selection politics that was going on. She did have the backing of Mr. Costello. That was quite important because there's a lot of support for Mr. Costello within the Liberal Party branches there. But all of this, again, just reinforces the point that despite the fact that it sometimes gives the impression of being a sort of a marginal seat because of the fact that various points in the electoral cycle, the margin can fall below 10%, Higgins really is a pretty safe Liberal seat. And the reason for that is pretty straightforward. If you've ever been in the electorate, you can tell it's a very, very affluent part of Melbourne. And all of its socioeconomic data points to the cohort of people who, while they may not necessarily be ultra-conservative on a range of social issues, their sympathy for the Labor Party is pretty limited. I think they have a similarly concerning view of the Greens. The Greens tend to perform better in those parts of the electorate where you've got slightly different demographics working. We have a slightly younger cohort. We have large numbers of renters. Areas like Paran and what have you are quite strong for the Greens. But when you move to the places like Caulfield and to Toorak and what have you, and you get a more traditional family structure, if you will, the Conservative vote starts to go up quite dramatically.
Those property prices in that outer ring of the seat of Higgins are far beyond the reach of many, and that is suggested attracts a particular type of person who votes Liberal. Is that what you're saying?
The demographics are actually a little bit more complicated than that because parts of Higgins are part of an inner part of Melbourne that's ageing quite dramatically as well.
Well, it's going to get to that. I mean, it's got to be, there's got to be a flux or a change within that as people get older.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes those changes can take a long time. Let's face it, Australians now are living into their 80s. We do know, because there's been all this discussion about housing crises and what have you, that there's also a tendency for Australians to hang on to their property even after their families have moved on. So I don't think that we'll see dramatic changes in the socioeconomic composition of Higgins anytime soon.
In the state election, the seat of Paran, which includes the seat of Higgins, we saw it fall to the Greens. What can we make of that in a federal election?
Paran is only a small part of Higgins. Basically, there are three state electorates that are covered by Higgins. One of them is Paran, as you rightly point out, which was won by the Greens, a dramatic result, quite a historic result. But we also have elements of the state seats of Caulfield and Malvern. They are very strong Liberal voting areas. So, in fact, Paran is the outrider, if you will, and presumably it's that part of the electorate that starts to give the impression that Higgins is an inner-city seat that could fall to the Greens along the lines of Melbourne or Wills or what have you. But, of course, that's not correct. First of all, the seats that are the most vulnerable to the Greens are actually very safe Labor seats, and they tend to have a much younger age cohort than you find in Higgins. So, whilst I think that often Greens candidates think that Higgins is a seat that they can do very well in, I doubt if even the most optimistic Green candidate would think that they could win the seat. I think the Greens' aspiration in Higgins would be to try and force the Liberal candidate to preferences. That would be quite a remarkable achievement, and I rather suspect that that's what the Greens would be hoping to do.
Well, I had a look at the ABC's outline of the seat of Higgins, a safe Liberal seat at 9.9%. And the rise of the Greens, they suggest that while mentioned as a future Greens prospect, the traditional inner seat of the seat of Higgins, it's entirely possible that Greens will outpoll Labor in this forthcoming election, and that the Greens cannot win that seat without forcing Liberal Party vote under 50%.
I think for the Greens to have a prospect of winning Higgins, you're quite right, they'd have to come at least second in the count. The Green candidate would have to be polling at least 35%, maybe more, and would have to force the the Liberal candidate down into the mid-30s as well.
Right.
I can't see that happening. I just can't see that happening.
Being such a safe seat, does that mean that the party doesn't have to invest as much in that seat financially in the election campaign?
Yes, I think so. Although, of course, one of the things that is always interesting to watch is how the local members will go out and about campaigning. And I rather suspect that that's done not just for the benefit of the voters, but also for the benefit of that small collection of people who live in the electorate, who vote Liberal in the electorate, but are also members of the Liberal Party. In other words, a sitting member doesn't want to be seen to be taking their seat for granted, even in a very safe seat. So one of the interesting features of this election is that a number of these Victorian Liberals who hold fairly safe seats have been very, very active out on the ground campaigning in their electorates. So I think that's part of the reason why. And the other one, of course, is that there are two elections going on, or there will be on the 2nd of July, one's for the House of Reps, but the other one's for the Senate as well. And the theory is that a candidate who's very active on the ground in the House of Reps can also help maximise the party's result in the Senate. And, of course, in Victoria, there's going to be an enormous contest between Labor, Liberal and the Greens for seats, and that's where the voters of Higgins, well, especially those who are contemplating voting Green, they may have some significance, because the Greens would be hoping to win at least two Senate seats in Victoria, given that we've got a double dissolution election happening.
Now, the play between the Greens and the Labor Party seems to be an interesting one. It was one that was highly criticised in the last federal election. What's your call regarding that interplay this time around?
Well, Labor and the Greens share a white-collar, post-materialist constituency. Post-materialists, we love to bandy that one around. And that sort of means, younger people, well-educated, people who hold very socially progressive views. The Green electoral successes, the lower house seats that they've won, the one seat that they have won in federal politics, Melbourne, of course, was a very safe Labor seat for a long time. The demographics of Melbourne changed quite dramatically, but the fact that it was a safe Labor seat had been consistent for most of those times. So to put it in a nutshell, basically, Labor and the Greens have a fiercely competitive relationship going, because they're competing for a similar constituency. And as long as you've got similar constituents up for grabs, you're going to have a competitive dynamic, and that transcends this sort of argument that because Labor and the Greens are on the same ideological side, they ought to be working together as colleagues. And of course, there's some talk about what would happen in the event of a nearly equal outcome in the House of Reps. What if the Greens held the balance of power in the lower house? Would there be an alliance? Would there be a coalition? And a lot of that is hypothetical, speculative. But I do think we should remember that the at heart, the essence of the relationship is a competitive one, because they're both trying to get the same sort of constituency, as it were.
In regards to the upper house, we have a new voting system for the upper house, which was said to make it difficult for the minor parties, yet a double dissolution where the entire house gets thrown up in the air may mean that it's not as difficult as it might have been.
The voting system hasn't changed. We still have single transferable vote proportional. What's changed is the allocation of preferences. In the past, voters were required to cast a preference for every candidate, and now we have a sort of an odd version of optional preferential voting, and none of us know how this is going to transpire. But what the consequence of that is that it's going to make it very difficult for any minor party that can't get close to the electoral quota to win a seat. In the past, you could win a seat with a small primary vote, provided you were getting a solid flow of preferences or surplus from the major parties. Now, because of the changes to the system, the preference flows probably won't be there. So I'm assuming that if you are a candidate and you don't get anywhere near 7.7%, which in Victoria, 7% of the Victorian electorate is about 260,000 votes. So you're going to need to get 260,000 votes to be guaranteed of getting a seat. If you don't get there, you're not going to get it, because there's going to be no flow of preferences, unless, of course, you're a minor party like the Greens that can accumulate a very large primary vote and be the last party standing when everybody else is eliminated, and even if there isn't a quota to be fulfilled. So as you can tell from what I'm saying, this is a really complicated electoral process, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens on Saturday when people vote.
Your prediction for the swing against Higgins or towards Higgins, one or the other?
I suspect that there'll be a swing against the government, only because the 2013 election was an absolute landslide victory for the coalition. There's no way they're going to get that again. So I rather suspect we might see a 3 or 4% two-party preferred swing against Kelly O'Dwyer. Might push Higgins down into that mid-range set of seats. But there's no way that she's going to lose it.
Dr. Nick Economou from Monash University, thank you so much for your political insights this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Well, one person who knows exactly what it's like to campaign in the seat of Higgins is Fiona Patten. She's now in the State Legislative Council. She was, in 2009, a candidate in the Higgins by-election. Fiona, thank you for joining us on The Informer.
Oh, thank you, Dean.
Fiona, what was it like to campaign in Higgins? It's a blue ribbon seat for Liberal, but what did that translate to on the campaign trail?
Look, I think, as you will recall, it was the very first campaign that the Sex Party ever ran, so we chose Higgins, the most blue ribbon, liberal, conservative, blue rinse electorate to, you know, have our first shot.
It's a hell of a way to cut your teeth.
It was a baptism, that's for sure. Baptism by blue rinse. It is a very interesting electorate, and I think it has changed enormously in this six or seven short years, but it was a very locked on liberal seat.
Peter Costello forced the by-election, so he was much loved within the electorate, and it was the first time that Kelly O'Dwyer had stepped up into the public fold as far as the broader community were concerned.
Mm. That's right, and remember we had Clive Hamilton running for the Greens at that time, and Labor wasn't running in the seat, so we had Clive Hamilton running for the Greens, who had come out of a very left-wing think tank, was really the anathema to the Sex Party because he wanted to ban all pornography and ban sex work. So, yes, I think Kelly felt anointed, obviously, and she still is to a certain degree. I think that is chipping away with the change in that electorate. But it was such a conservative place, and people were so shocked to see someone like the Sex Party standing there. But I have to say, before that, we got a great deal of interest, and people were genuinely interested in what the hell we were doing there.
I saw a lovely photo taken of you at a primary school, I think it was, in the Higgins electorate, and it's a photo of you in your Sex Party T-shirt, and behind you is a woman looking over her glasses in a blue O'Dwyer T-shirt, quite disparagingly, I might say.
We did get a little bit of that. But what I found was really interesting was when we were on the polling booths, and you did sit down and you, as anyone who's worked in a polling booth knows, there's plenty of time to speak to the opposition. And you do it in a very friendly way, generally. And once they started looking at our policies, started seeing where we were coming from, you know, we had a lot of people saying, actually, you're not quite as frightening as we thought you were. And really, you'd find them nodding on a number of our policies. And I certainly, now that I'm in the Legislative Council, I'm starting to get a number of Tuareg ladies, you know, quietly nudging me, saying that they fully support the work that we're doing.
Polling day starts very, very early for political parties, and there was an incident that took place very early that morning on polling day in the Higgins by-election.
Yes, that was quite an extraordinary situation, where we had decked out a white van, very beautifully, I might add. I do want to throw you in on this, Dean. You know I do.
Guilty as charged. There were red and yellow balloons all over the roof of this van and posters all around the side with a big message on the back of the van.
Yes, Sex Party on the back. And I have to say there was quite a bit of glitter also on the van. It looked fabulous, but apparently the good burghers of Toorak, particularly those along Chapel Street, thought that we may be a mobile brothel. And we were then stopped by the police and held for probably a good 20 or 30 minutes while they checked that, yes, indeed, there was an election on. That was the most interesting thing, was the police didn't even know that there was an election on that day. But then, yes, we were held for a good 20 or 30 minutes, wasn't it?
Absolutely. We were questioned whilst they did some due diligence on just exactly what the Australian Sex Party was and what day it was as far as the election was concerned. But this had followed an incident also in the seat of Higgins where you were evicted from the Orong Hotel.
Oh, that's right. So the night before, and this has become a bit of a tradition with the Sex Party now, that we go on a pub crawl, where we go around and merrily, you know, have a drink in a variety of pubs in the electorate and hand out flyers, if people are interested, or just engage people in conversation. Yes, we walked into that pub and we were summarily, well, very quickly kicked right out by a very strong female publican who said, we won't have your sort here. Don't you know that this is a... Did she say it was a Kelly O'Dwyer pub?
Yeah.
I believe she said it was a Kelly O'Dwyer pub.
That day was an interesting one for... and a very big learning experience for all of us. My recollections of the electorate were that the pegged areas for those parties at the polling booths were... secured very early on in the day, and if you dead step an inch over the boundary of particularly the incumbent party, then you were summarily kicked out of that space too.
Oh, I know, but I do recall that one of our rather recalcitrant volunteers hastily popped a sex party sticker on the back of Kelly O'Dwyer's car at one of the polling booths in view of the Liberal volunteers, and none of them said a word.
Now, that day we got wind that there was going to be a special appearance at one of the polling booths, and we raced down to the polling booth to get you in front of the cameras. Do you remember that? And you actually secured an interview with them, and the people manning the polling booth were very upset that you managed to get so much airtime.
Well, that's right. Well, the police shouldn't have stopped us. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got that media. But yes, we did. Well, we did what it took to really, in those days, we were, well, obviously completely unknown. We'd only been registered for about 5 seconds when we ran in that election. I must say, our bright yellow T-shirts with sex emblazoned on them in the leafy suburbs of Higgins with all the lovely ladies in blue, we certainly did shine out, didn't we?
Well, congratulations to what you have since become. I'll just add one more thing. Before we left the particular place where we were almost arrested on the bridge of the South Yarra train station, you were smart enough to take a photo of the van, send it through to your media team, and within hours there was an article online about the sex party almost being arrested on polling day, perhaps the first time the police have intervened in a campaign. Fiona Patton, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your recollections of the seat of Higgins.
Thank you, Dean. Remember, it was our recollections.
Fiona Patton there. Now, a reminder that tomorrow night, the Gay and Lesbian Organisation for Business Enterprise is hosting a Meet the Higgins Politicians. It's my great pleasure to be the MC for that occasion, and I am told there are just a couple of tickets left. Check out globemelbourne.org.au if you'd like to attend. It's now time to cross to the United Kingdom, and we're joined by senior multi-platform journalist for Pink News Media Group, Bobby Ray. It's been a while, but welcome back to The Informer.
Yeah, good to be back. Good to see you again.
Now, Bobby, Sher has stuck her boots into Donald Trump. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. I would love to see inside her mind, especially on Twitter. Yeah, she's taken to Twitter again to show she really, really doesn't like Donald Trump. And it's compared him to Hitler. Now, I don't know where she's got it from. She's managed to get a mock-up of Donald Trump looking exactly like Hitler, a famous portrait of Hitler, and has shared it to say, well, basically, Hitler wants to make Germany great again. Donald Trump wants to make America great again. Where's the difference between the two? Very, very interesting.
This comes at a time where I believe the leader of North Korea has endorsed Donald Trump to some extent. Interesting times. Elton John never got to meet President Putin, I believe.
No, a surprise, surprise, I would say. I suppose after his little trick early in the year where he's pranked some Russian comedians, he was there on Monday for a concert and he was supposed to meet Vladimir Putin, but Vladimir Putin's spokesman announced at the weekend that Putin was too busy to meet him and his schedule wouldn't allow the meeting to go ahead. So I can't say that I'm overly surprised, but it didn't go ahead. But Elton John has said he is hopeful that they'll still meet at some point in the future, but I won't hold my breath on that one.
And this follows a prank call, does it not, of a radio station ringing Elton John's people posing as Putin?
Yes, that was the one that I think everyone remembers, is when they posed as Putin and he bought into it. And there was a lot of coverage of that, and it was very funny.
Now, Apple, the computer company, they're internationally renowned for being accepting of the LGBTI community, but they're in a bit of strife at present.
Yeah, it's a very strange one from Apple. Like you said, they're normally very, very good with the LGBT community. Also, the chief executive, Tim Cook, is openly gay. But there seems to be, for a special Mother's Day advert they produced that aired in America, Canada, and that's in Australia, there was an advert that involved lesbian mothers. However, the version that aired in Turkey, Germany, Japan and France, surprisingly, that has gay marriage, actually took out the lesbian couple from the advert. So we managed to track down the various different versions, and it's quite surprising that the only couples that seem to have taken out is this lesbian couple.
Is there any word from the company itself?
They haven't said too much about it. I think they're kind of keeping quite quiet in regards to it. Whether they're reacting to local pressures, I don't know. But I think the one, like I say, that really kind of caught us out was the fact that they changed in France, who are kind of very progressive on LGBT rights as far as they're concerned.
And finally, I believe we now cause earthquakes.
Yes, apparently we do. According to a cleric in Ghana, who basically said to justify violence against LGBT people, or gay men in particular, actually, but basically when gay men have sex, it causes earthquakes and it offends Allah. He was saying this in an interview with a local news station to justify local violence that had been happening against the LGBT community there in Ghana. So it's a rather surprising response to something that's very private.
Well, we've caused fires, floods, now earthquakes. We're extremely powerful people, it seems.
Yeah, it seems that we are.
Bobby Ray, thank you very much for joining us on The Informer. It's great to speak with you again.
Yeah, speak again soon. Thanks.
Bobby Ray is a multi-platform journalist with Pink News Media Group. And that's it from me for The Informer tonight. There'll be a podcast of today's episode available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au/The Informer. Follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy, and you can follow me. I'm Dean Beck. I'm on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Till next time, you keep well. Take care. Bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.